Blog Talk Radio.
Este es su show, Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show. I'm your host, Will Santiago Viera. Hoy tenemos un show increíble. Tenemos de nuevo a nuestro amigo Jonathan Marcantoni, que nos va a traer el libro Boricua del mes. So we have a great show today. We have Jonathan Marcantoni with us, and he's bringing us the Book of the Month, the Boricua Book of the Month, for this month. You know, he's going to be coming here every month, every first Friday of the month, to talk to us about a great book written by a Puerto Riqueño. So we'll be doing that in a little bit. De todos modos, mi gente, quiero pedirle que vayan a Black Talk Radio, a nuestra página. Lo que tienen que hacer es a blacktalkradio.com/NYC Piano Man. Follow our show. You know, if you follow our show, once you go to that page, what will happen is that we'll send you an email letting you know when the next show is coming up. Okay? And you can also listen to our archives. Also, give us a like on Facebook. We have a page called Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show. Go there, give us a like. And we also have a very private page. You won't find it by just looking for it. You have to write down the name, Boricuas of the World Social Club. It's a page where all our members hang out and we chat and we exchange ideas and that sort of thing. So find it and join and ask your friends to join. And if you add any friends, make sure you add good people. We want to have nice people who can add to us, not take away from us. Okay? So today, like I said, we have a great show because it's the second edition of Boricua Book of the Month. And of course, we have with us Jonathan Marcantoni, who is going to bring us that in a little while. ¿Cómo está, mi hermano?
Estoy muy bien, muy bien. Ha sido un día muy fabuloso.
Oh, qué bueno. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Our day has been a little cool, but thankfully we've had some here in New York, because you're out mm-hmm. in Colorado. We had some nice sunny weather because we had a couple of rainy days in New York, but thankfully mm-hmm. you know that's done and we are here. So, Jonathan, quickly, mm-hmm. how is your book doing? Kings of Seventh Avenue.
Yes, King 7th Avenue. We're doing great. We're actually, I got two events coming up this next week. I got one talking to the Latino Community Luncheon, which is a forum of Latinos and supporters of the Latino community in the Pikes Peak region. And I'm going to be talking about the University Project and also my books and books I've represented. And then on Saturday, next Saturday, the 12th, I'm going to be at the Book Bar in Denver. You know, me and my protege, Nami Thompson, we're going to be celebrating my book, Kings of 7th Avenue. It should be a real fun event. We're going to make it theatrical. We're going to be acting out scenes from the book, scenes from her work as well, bringing in the audience. It's going to be a real fun show.
Excellent.
So, and also, I know you were wanting me to bring up Feast of San Sebastian, which, of course, my previous mm-hmm. book, and... we're actually, I've been in the mix, all thanks to our good friend Nelson Dennis, who introduced me to Christian Carretero, who's an extremely talented Boricua filmmaker, and we've been developing a script for it. So hopefully that'll
wonderful,
move
wonderful.
Forward in the next stages. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, my mother told me that I was a really good actor when I was a kid. And I believe her, so if there's a part for me in there, just let me know.
you know, there's a lot of scenes with corpses. I think you would be excellent.
I think I want something that moves a bit more than that, but at any rate.
you could be convulsing. I don't see why not.
Okay. Thank you. But you're such a sweetheart. So, Genevieve, recently you shared a poem that you wrote, and I asked you if I could read it on the air, and you said that it was okay. And I really want folks to listen to this poem because it speaks volumes about lo que está pasando en nuestra patria, Puerto Rico. And so he named it A Puerto Rico al Borde del Abismo. And yo no soy poeta, pero creo que puedo leer bastante bien. Así que, por favor, si me bajan en todo lo demás que están haciendo allá y escuchan esto porque está bonito. Y dice así. Isla querida, donde la semilla de mi familia fue cosecha. Donde los sueños maternales y triunfales fueron ahogados. Debajo de olas sin parar, isla mía, en el medio del mar, chocando contra piedras, de sed, de seda, como un hombre sofocando en la comida favorita, que sostenía su vida, isla mía, con pasado bien jodido, hasta que echaste las semillas de tu raza a las cuatro esquinas, esperando con ansias que encontrar una vida destinada a la grandeza. Pero no hay vida sin tus costas, tus ocasos, tus sombras. Puerto Rico, tu gobierno chatarra te ha traicionado, pero tu gente no te ha olvidado. Tus niños siguen rezando, porque no hay patria fuera de ti. No hay patria tan querida para mí. And that's Jonathan Marcantoni's poema titulado A Puerto Rico al Borde del Abismo. Speaks volumes about what's going on in Puerto Rico ahora. It kind of, you know, inspired us to think about lo que es Puerto Rico, lo que queremos que siga siendo y lo que está pasando. Maybe it inspire us to do a little more to make sure that Puerto Rico sale al aire y sale al flote. That was nice, Jonathan. Please continue to write some more stuff like that and allow me to read it because me inspiro, mi hermano. me inspiro.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it. And your reading was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. I tried. But anyway, folks, you know that we're trying to get Jonathan here in New York to present his book. So if you guys got any ideas where you'd like to see him, if you know of any venue that would like to present Jonathan, send me an email at boricuasoftheworld@gmail.com. That's fairly simple to remember, boricuasoftheworld@gmail.com. And you know, bring me your ideas. I'll contact Anthony. We can do a three-way, whatever it is. But, you know, we're working on bringing him to a couple of venues here in New York. But if you have any venue where you would like to see Jonathan talk about his book or his books, please let us know. We would like for you to do that. And if you want to see the work that he's done, you can always go to jonathanmarcantoni.com. And you'll see about his work, you'll learn about who he is and what he has done. So no se olviden de eso, por favor, okay? We are bringing you the book of the month, the Boricua book of the month in a little bit. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what is going on here in America. You know, recently we had some folks who were killed in San Bernardino, California. Husband and wife went out and shot a bunch of people. But this is nothing new to us. You know, this happens almost every week where we got mass shootings. Jonathan is from Colorado, and in Colorado we had that fellow Robert Deere, I believe, who shot up Planned Parenthood. And today the Congress had a chance to tighten up some of these gun laws, but they decided to not do it. And what they're saying is that we send our prayers, and our thoughts and prayers is all they have. They don't want to do anything about guns in America. And so all those guns from the South are finding their ways up here to our kids who don't know what they're doing, and they're killing each other. And then we're giving ammunition to even folks with the right licensing are killing their families, are killing others, you know. So I don't know what to do. Jonathan, this happened in this fella, Robert Deere, shot up Planned Parenthood. Dylan Roof, I believe, is Charleston Church, the church in Charleston. Adam Lanza, who the Newton, Connecticut shooter, James Holmes, the Aurora movie theater guy. Today, the New York Daily News called Wayne LaPierre, the head of the NRA, a terrorist and a gun jihadist. Do you think any change will come with
this? He's a gun trafficker. I mean, quite frankly, the NRA is paid off for by arms dealers. And in any other arrangement, it would be seen as completely illegal. These are arms shipments that are being forced through our government and our society, quite frankly, and convincing people that they need to have arsenals in their houses for whatever use they deem fit. But I just want to speak for a moment about what's going on in Colorado, because Aurora is about an hour and 20 minutes from where I live. The Planned Parenthood, where this shooting occurred, is 10 minutes from where I live. In fact, the officer who was murdered, he actually works at the same school I work at. I work at University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, and he was one of the UCCS officers. Today I was actually on campus, and they had a massive procession. They actually closed down the highway for the funeral procession for this man. And the procession started at the university. So while I was at campus today, I saw his casket. I saw his hearse and all of his coworkers and his family and not family, his friends. And it's really traumatized the campus. All week I've been receiving emails of remembrances that they're sending out to everyone. He was truly beloved. I mean, they talk about in the news that, you know, he was a really great guy and all, but this is someone that his colleagues, people who even just met him randomly, really loved this guy. And the entire city has been mourning because of these deaths, not just the officers, but the other two deaths of people who actually were just at Planned Parenthood supporting relatives. That's all they were doing. They weren't even getting any services done. They were just there to support people that they loved, and in exchange were murdered. And I think that being in a city that's currently recovering from one of these mass shootings, I really wish that someone like Wayne LaPierre, who lives in a mansion and with plenty of armed guards, I really wish that he would consider the pain and the sense of safety being taken away from people.
Despair.
The despair. And Colorado is a right to carry state. I mean, you walk around and, I mean, there's people and they have guns and holsters just walking around freely in public. And to me, it's very alarming. I've seen it in public, and with my children, and I've felt very offended and very frightened for myself and my own, and my safety for their safety. Because, you know, there's this whole idea that, oh, well, as long as they're with the NRA, then they're good people. They're the good guys. And it's like, well, how do you know that?
The problem is,
how do you know that?
The problem
guy
is
was one of the supposed good guys.
Yeah, the problem is here that everybody from time to time has a drink. Everybody from time to time loses their temper. Everyone from time to time has a desperate moment. And we don't know whether these people have the metal to be able to deal with these issues without going to a gun. The gun is the easiest thing. It's like, look, I don't want to compare it to mom, but the first thing that she did was grab the primero que conseguía when we were doing something wrong, la chancleta. I grabbed the chancleta and go for me, because that's the weapon of choice for my mom. But what I'm trying to say is that this is, you know, they have the guns right there. So obviously, they can lose their heads so much, and it's in the news all the time, where someone, majority of the time, from the South or from the Midwest, who picks up a gun and shoots their family, you know? And that's unconscionable to me. I can't believe that people in Congress and the people in the NRA are doing this. I have a couple of groups. I just created a new group called Enough Thoughts and Prayers. We demand a plan, where we have a petition that I just created, change.org, telling all these folks to get their act together and do something. I don't know that it'll do anything, but at least it'll unite people into fighting, because I think that we have a chance now with the Daily News having their front page with the faces of the fellow who shot up all these folks a couple of days ago, and also the faces of Robert Deere, Dylan Roof, Adam Lanza, James Holmes, and Wayne LaPierre as the terrorist. You know, they say the guy who shot up the people in California is a terrorist, but so are these folks, including Wayne LaPierre. So, you know, it's about time that we start waking up. You know, we're getting numb, and we're not, you know, just this is just becoming normal, and we have to stop people from letting this become normal. But I think a
big problem with gun culture is that in gun culture, not everyone, but in the pervading culture, you're basically told that the way you solve problems is with a gun. The way that you protect yourself is with a gun. So if you feel threatened by something, the first thing you're going to do is pick up a gun. And that's a distortion of what a gun should be used for. You know, yes, a gun can be used for defense. It can be used for hunting, for things like that, perfectly reasonably, perfectly safely. But when you have somebody who clearly has emotional issues and they don't know how to deal with life, and you tell them that, hey, a gun solves all problems, then guess what? They're going to use it, and they're going to use it in violent, horrible ways.
Yeah. And the problem is here that we have a Congress that is being bought by the NRA. And so they don't pass any real legislation that has some bite on it in order to curtail this problem. It's horrifying, and I hope people would join my groups. One of them is called No More Guns, and the other one is Enough Thoughts and Prayers, We Demand a Plan, and there you can go to change.org and sign the petition. At any rate, we're here because Jonathan, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I just want to say Thoughts and Prayers is about as insulting as someone telling you they just want to be friends. Like, Thoughts and Prayers is about the least sincere thing that you can say to somebody, because, you know what, God's not a genie. Like, what exactly are thoughts and prayers supposed to accomplish?
Yeah, and my mother my mother's always said to me, Dios dice, ayúdate que yo te ayudaré. If we're not doing something, you know, how do we expect God to guide us in any way? No, you have to. That's why we need to take money out of politics. We need to take these corporations out of politics so that they won't be able to fund these guys. You know, and term limits, as far as I'm concerned, I love term limits. But anyway, let's get to you, because today we have Boricua Book of the Month edition number 2. Which is something that I've been waiting for, because I've also been you left me out. You never told me what the book was. People, you never told anyone who the person is. So everybody's waiting for this. So, mi gente, sin más preámbulo, aquí los dejo con Jonathan Marc Anthony, Boricua Book of the Month, edition 2. I always have a problem with your name. Aquí está Marc Anthony.
Marc Anthony, it's a very rhythmic and musical name. You as a musician, you should appreciate it.
True.
You know, this is actually a very appropriate book since we've been talking about murder. This is a murder mystery. It is actually by an author that I have had the great pleasure and privilege, and it really is a privilege, to have been the first person to sign them to their first book contract. When I was editor-in-chief of INO Publishing, I signed this author, and it was for a book that they wrote called Covering the Sun with My Hand, which was a book about a Puerto Rican family in the 1970s dealing with mental illness, specifically schizophrenia. And that was a book that went on to win Best First Novel at the International Latino Book Awards. The book that we're celebrating tonight, though, is her follow-up. The author's name is Teresa Varela. She is a New Yorican, but a New Yorican with very strong ties to the island. She goes to the island pretty consistently every year. And in her works, that love for our culture and for our language, for the aspects of our culture that are not always put front and center, the more spiritual aspects, that is what she writes about. She infuses all of her work with a perspective that is uniquely Puerto Rican. And the reason that I chose her second book as opposed to her first one is that her second book, which is called Nights of Indigo Blue, it is actually the first in a series of mystery novels about Daisy Muñiz. Nights of Indigo Blue is a Puerto Rican detective story. And Daisy Muñiz, even though she's not officially a private eye, she gets drawn into this murder investigation and sort of becomes a de facto one. Ooh. And the reason why I've chosen this book is because Puerto Rican detectives, when was the last time you heard of one? Or a book
Never.
Series that focused on a Puerto Rican detective?
No.
Yeah, but
Never heard of one.
You haven't. Never. You know, I mean, the last time that I had heard of a Puerto Rican detective, it was New York Undercover. I don't know if you remember that show. It was back in the 90s.
Yes.
But also another thing about even that show, it was a male. Here we have a female detective. This is a female character that other Boricua females can identify with and can even aspire to be like. I mean, in much the same way as Sherlock Holmes has inspired many a young boy to be a detective, Daisy Muñiz can do the same thing for young girls and even older girls. You know, this is a story, and I actually did also sign or offer the contract for this story as well. What I feel about this is that this book needs to be on the bookshelves of every single Latino in the country and outside of the country as well, because this is presenting a side of our culture that is not normally given attention. And I just want to mention very quickly, there are other Latino detective novels going around. One particularly, Barrio Imbroglio by Daniel Cubias, is another one, but that's more from the Mexican/El Salvadorian perspective. And again, it's male. I really want to highlight the talent of our female artists in our community. And another thing that is very special about this book, I feel, is that one of the central aspects of Daisy Muñiz's investigative powers, so to speak, is her connection with the Orisha tradition. Orisha, and that
that particular mysticism is central to the book. It's central to how Daisy comes to solving the murder, and also in kind of figuring out how to better her own life. Daisy is a very complicated character. She's a recovering alcoholic. She's a woman who has had just a series of very bad relationships, including the relationship with the murder victim. She was actually one of his former lovers. And so her delving, her best friend Jose is a part of the Odisha tradition. He's an Iwau. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Iwau. So mm-hmm. He's new to the tradition, and he's the one who helps guide her in these spiritual messages that she's receiving, these sort of mental messages that she's receiving, to lead her down the path of figuring out who killed Dr. Campbell. Another thing that Teresa does that I think is very special about this book is she not only places the perspective of the story in the hands of a female, she not only introduces the reader to Odisha culture and tradition, but she also portrays homosexual characters, Jose and his husband, Rubio. They are portrayed just as regular everyday people, and I think that's something that I actually kind of wish was portrayed in other shows and books and media. The fact that he's a gay man is almost beside the point. She writes him in a way that is devoid of any and all stereotypes of what you usually have with a gay character. Like, he's just a regular everyday dude. And it just so happens that he's married to a man, you know, and I do think that's special. I do think the way that she portrays that relationship between Jose and Rubio is very progressive minded, and it's also very liberating artistically, because we're not getting hung up on the labels that these characters have. We're just mm-hmm. experiencing them as people, and I mm-hmm. think that's something that Teresa brings to all of her work. She's a very humanistic and very compassionate and empathetic writer, and her kind of perceptions into the day-to-day life of her characters is something that not only is relatable, but it's also inspiring.
Right.
So I just like last month, I'm going to read a selection from the book. And the scene that I'm reading is actually a scene that takes place in Puerto Rico. Daisy is on a work trip, and she leaves her coworkers to go visit her family. She goes visit, in this scene, she's visiting her aunt and her cousin. And the scene that I'm about to read goes into the Odisha tradition and the ties that not just Daisy but her entire family has to that tradition. So, without further ado. About an hour later, I sat there licking the cream cheese topping off the rich pumpkin dessert they made with me in mind. I was full and satisfied, but it wasn't just the food. It was more about having an afternoon with family who, unfortunately, I had almost forgotten about. I wasn't sure how I'd get back to the villa that evening. They'd have to roll me out the door. This was another type of relaxed feeling that was brand new to me. I decided to try to find out a bit more about my great-aunt Lola before I returned. I was hoping to hear about Tia Lola, I ventured forth. Papi told me that I was like her. Tia Minerva tilted her head to the side and laughed. I guess you do look a little like her. She was about a foot shorter than you, though. Do you have any pictures? I hadn't thought about the fact that we might actually look like each other. Felix, bring me the box. Titi pointed to a heavy wooden armoire in the corner of the room. I was speechless when she opened the box. It was filled with black and white photos with some color ones, too. I never saw any like these at home. Why hadn't my parents taken these pictures, I wondered. This is your tia Lola when she was a teenager. Yes, you do look a lot like her. Now that I see you next to the pictures, I see what Octavio meant. Here's your father. This one is me and him. My aunt scattered a few of them on the table. look at this one. You wouldn't believe it. It's your father and your mother when they were first dating, before he went to Vietnam. Dear Minerva Arms, he looked so happy. I never saw him look like that again. He came back like he'd seen death itself. Why do you say that? The men who went to that war, her voice trailed. But then he had another problem after a while. What are you talking about? What problem? It's better not to talk about it. Her lips seemed to thin out before my eyes. We have to go on with our lives. These pictures were taken years ago. We were different people then. How do you mean, different? I didn't want her to stop talking. If only she'd go on forever. She was right. The people in these pictures bore no resemblance to my parents. My mother looked so soft in the pictures. Did your mother ever talk to you about what happened? She asked. I could see that she didn't want to give something away that wasn't hers to give. If you mean about my brother, I know about that. I found out about him during the first Misa I went to and approached my parents about it. They never volunteered any information to me. Once I brought it up, my mother had flown into a rage. How dare I bring up something that they'd spent almost 30 years hiding? I know that he got hit by a car and my parents were never the same after he died. I thought your father was bad after Vietnam. When your brother died, your father turned into a shadow of the man he used to be. I can't blame him, though. My aunt gave a quick glance to my cousin, and I saw how fiercely proud she was of him. But then things changed when they had you. They were so happy when you were born. I was born about 3 years after my brother was killed. My mother never forgave my father for being, how she described it, out of it, and not holding on to his son. She blamed him. That was a discussion I needed to have with my parents. At least, that's what I believed I had to do based on my conversations with my sponsor, Angela. I guess they were. I smiled and went through more of the pictures. I was determined to keep things light and also wanted to know more about my great aunt. Tell me about Tia Lola. Too bad you never got to see her in action, Titi Minerva nodded. That woman could read you in an instant. So she was psychic? Spiritual is what we called it. Yes, people came to her for readings all the time. She taught me a lot. Some I was born with, but there was a lot she taught me. You mean that people came to you for readings too? Yes, they still line up. Well, not really, but they know that I'll see them on Thursdays and Saturdays, and they come. I want to do that too. The words seem to fly out of my mouth. I hear things. Is that what happened to you? Yes, and you'll see. The longer you do this, the more you'll experience. You'll learn to see clearly. Do you have someone to teach you? Hector, an old friend of mine, is helping, but sometimes I wonder. I think that what I'm experiencing isn't normal. No one at home ever talks about it. I think I'm crazy because sometimes I hear voices. At least that's what my ex used to tell me. As long as they're not telling you to hurt someone or making you sick. If you're not disturbed by them, then I think that in our family, it's normal. Both Minerva and Felix laughed. Very normal. How come my father wasn't in on this, I asked. You all grew up together, didn't you? Our father was a strange man. He didn't want to believe Papa used to say it made us lower class. I think he spent a lifetime trying to hide the fact that he was the same way, and he came down hard on your father the few times he seemed interested. On the other hand, our mother had a tight hold on us, as the girls in the house. Even though your father might have been open to this, Papa never allowed him to express it. And how come you're in on it? I addressed my cousin, who was quiet for most of the conversation. It was different by that time, he said. My grandfather died and my father wasn't around too much. I was basically raised by my mother. Don't forget that times changed too, mija. Tia Minerva smiled. Remember that. Your mother could change too. Wait, how did you know anything about my mother? She caught me off guard with that one. She's my komai. I know her since she was that little girl in that picture there. Sometimes life is hard for some of us. Give your mother a chance. That's all I'm saying. Tia reached over to the platter. No, don't let this go to waste. Eat.
I want it more.
Yeah. I know. Teresa has that effect on me.
That's definitely a book I want for Christmas.
Absolutely. So give folks the name. You listening.
give the name again so that people can make a note of it.
Yes, Knights of Indigo Blue a Daisy Muñiz mystery. Tomorrow morning on my website, JonathanMarcantoni.com, we will have the book up on the Borico Book Club page. And if you click on the book cover, it'll take you to the Amazon page and you can buy it. So
great.
Go out and get the book. It's a great Christmas gift. It's a wonderful mystery. I can tell you it's very satisfying, but even by the end of it, you're going to be wanting to hear more about Daisy and her adventures.
Yeah, it sounds like an amazing book, and I'm sure that I have an account with Amazon, like most of us, and I'm going to see right now as soon as we finish, see if I can get it on Amazon. Thank you very, very much, brother. That was really interesting. That was really good, and I can't wait for you to come back next month with the third monthly edition of Boricua Book of the Month. I'm glad you left me without telling me the name and left folks waiting for the name, because I'm pretty sure that the excitement was bigger.
Yes.
So that's all. That's all great.
Let me just say. So our audience knows, the Boricua Book Club is alternating. One month it's going to be a classic Puerto Rican novel, and next month it'll be a modern Puerto Rican novel. So next month is another classic, but I've already had a few Puerto Rican writers send me their manuscripts for consideration. And so if you are a Puerto Rican writer out there, you're in the diaspora, you're on the island, it doesn't matter. You could even be in France or Russia, I don't care. You're Puerto Rican and you're a writer, send me your manuscripts to john.marcantoni@gmail.com. I'll be happy to consider them for future editions.
Excellent. So, mi gente, ya lo saben, tenemos este libro y queremos que apoyen a nuestros escritores. We really want you to go out, buy these books, and show these folks some love. These are Boricuas like nosotros, and it's important that we back each other up, man. You know, before we go, I'd like to say that I had a nice conversation with a lady named Melissa Shaw Apostolou on our page, Boricuas of the World Social Club, and I said that I was going to say hello, so I'm saying hello, Melissa Shaw Apostolou, y un saludo también a su madre en Isabela, Puerto Rico. Jonathan, thank you very much for being with us today. We look forward to next month. Mi gente, los dejamos con esta. Ahora nos vamos. Ya saben que aquí siempre estamos para ustedes, trayéndole música, trayéndole información. Ya tenemos el libro mensualmente. Es importante que le digan a sus amistades que sintonicen nuestro show, ¿ok? Es un show pequeñito aquí, nosotros no hacemos dinero, no hacemos nada, nosotros lo que hacemos es hablar con nuestra gente, hacer nuestras cositas aquí para que ustedes aprendan. Si no lo saben, también, si tienen algo que decirnos, nos pueden mandar un correo a Boricuas of the World Social Club, Boricuas of the World @gmail.com, eso es lo que tienen que hacer, ¿ok? Recuerden que para saber dónde vamos, tenemos que saber de dónde venimos. Que Dios los bendiga, mi gente, y hablamos la semana que viene. Los dejo con un poquito de música para que salgan de aquí bailando. Que Dios me los bendiga a todos.
Alguien te está hablando mal de mí. No sé lo que te han dicho, pero estás rara conmigo. Y tú te alejas de mí. Alguien te está hablando mal de mí. Lenguas de serpiente que cuando hablan mienten y van envenenando tu sentir. Amor, el mundo está plagado de envidiosos, de gentes que no miran a los ojos y hablan por lo bajo lo que no pueden gritar. Amor, ven, aclárala conmigo. La intriga es nuestro único enemigo. Hablemos frente a frente, que no hay nada que ocultar. Ya que te está hablando mal de mí, pregúntate si no nos quieren ver sufrir. Alguien hace por tu bien aunque te hiere. No crezcas, es una forma cruel de amar. Amor, el mundo está plagado de envidiosos, de gentes que no miran a los ojos y hablan por lo bajo lo que no pueden gritar. Amor, tus dudas ven, acláralas conmigo. La intriga es nuestro único enemigo. Hablemos frente a frente que no hay nada que ocultar. Ya que te está hablando mal de mí, pregúntate si no nos quieres.